ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Now, it turns out that perhaps we've lost our skill in arguing. Maybe some of us never built a very good capacity for it in the first place. And there are some really good reasons for having a good old verbal stoush. Apparently, it might be good for us. Associate Professor Michaelis Michael teaches logic and reasoning at the University of New South Wales School of Humanities and Languages. He's a man who knows something about an argument. Let's have a chat to him. He reckons we can all get better at it. Hello and welcome to Nightlife, Michaelis.
Hello, Andrew. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Your line of work must raise some interesting arguments. What's one that springs to mind?
Well, philosophers deal in arguments, good ones, bad ones. We love arguments.
Yes. Give us an example of one which you've seen which was out of the ordinary.
Religious arguments are ones that I really do like. There's a common misconception that, you know, we shouldn't discuss religion, but actually if you think about religious history, it's full of people from different religious points of view trying to argue with each other and trying to establish their particular religious point of view. And there are lots of lessons in there about how to get clear about where different religions differ and, you know, what we think, whatever the we is. So in those cases, you see some really intriguing and far-reaching explorations.
Yes, I can imagine that one must bring up some absolute beauties. So what are the main reasons, do you see, that arguments go from good to bad?
Oh, okay. So most of the arguments we give are bad arguments on their surface. But what we intend is that the bad argument can be fleshed out into a good argument. We usually only give an indication of what our real argument is. That is, we don't show all the steps. We show the general direction. I mean, a classic example might be something as trivial as Socrates is a human, so Socrates is mortal. You know, that is the sort of thing you might hear. That's not a good argument, but it's an argument that can be fleshed out into a good argument if you fill in the missing premises. And those might be something like all humans are mortal as a missing premise. We don't actually give that missing premise. We assume that if we were challenged, we could fill it out. And I think that happens most of the time we engage with other people and give arguments. And it's only when we're challenged that we actually stop and slow down and try and spell out exactly what our reasons are and try and give them all the steps. That's typical. And you notice that a lot of people who haven't engaged much in argument are not very good at really giving the reasons why they think what they think. Mm. What I think is what's really a good thing for us to practice is to really try and get clear about why it is that we think what we think. That's a kind of self-understanding, if you like.
Okay.
Something that helps us.
So if I'm to sort of replay that back to you so that I understand it clearly, we already know what we believe, but we haven't necessarily thought through the steps, let alone explained it to the other person. And the other person isn't a mind reader. They can't read our minds and know what's in our minds. So misunderstanding occurs because and then that's where the argument gets out of hand. Is that right?
That's where it can get out of hand, or that's where perhaps we aren't as self-aware as we would like to think that we are, and we can't actually spell out what our real reasoning is. Maybe we're not even up to spelling out what missing premises are. I think that's all too common, that we find ourselves at a loss and feel threatened when someone's challenging us about something we believe, and we give what we think is a good explanation, they point out some of the gaps in the explanation, and then we start feeling threatened and we start reacting emotionally. I think that's a very typical experience. We all have the experience of walking away from a discussion thinking, if only I had said,
yes.
That sort of experience is all too human, I'm afraid.
So what goes on then when we're having an argument? Are we listening very well? Is that one way to start to make the argument better, to listen to what the other person's saying with an open mind rather than thinking, well, I need to counter with this next response?
Yeah, that's exactly right, that we would do better if we actually did listen more generously, more with an open mind, try and understand what they're saying, why they're saying what they're saying, and perhaps also try to think that it's not so awful if we actually get shown to be wrong. I think we do have a very defensive attitude that we shouldn't have, that we should be asking ourselves what's true rather than how do I defend myself. Perhaps losing a few arguments might be and learning that what we thought was true isn't true would be a really good experience, and one that would actually make us feel like it's not so awful to actually find out that what we were thinking was wrong.
Right. Well, it feels like like there's something that we should be practicing from when we're much younger. Do we get much practice as children or as young people in how to not only have a good argument, but to find ourselves wrong and to sit with that feeling?
No, I don't think we do, but perhaps that's not our own fault. Maybe it's what we have modeled for us. I mean, you might ask yourself what your parents were like. Did they model that sort of epistemic humility of accepting that they were wrong when they were wrong? And perhaps that's what we've got to do for our kids, to model to them the idea that you don't ruthlessly fight, you accept when you've been holding something that turns out to be false.
I wonder what it was like in your household. If you have a way in which you were taught to argue as a child around the table, send me a text 0467 922 702. We're having a chat this evening with Michaelis Michael, who is from the University of New South Wales. He's an associate professor teaching logic in the humanities and languages. And logic is one of those things that that I think we could all do with a little bit more of. Now, Michaelis, some people seem to love a good argument, so to speak, and other people tend to avoid them at all costs. What are some of the reasons that people rush towards arguments and then other people run screaming from them?
Well, I mean, there are good and bad reasons to like arguments and good and bad reasons not to like them. I mean, a bad reason to like an argument is because you're perhaps gifted at assailing someone and making them feel inadequate, and maybe you're very good at rhetoric and you can tongue-tie people. That would be a bad reason. A good reason to like arguments is that this is a chance to try and understand the other person a bit better. Try and understand their point of view. If you listen well, engaging in an argument is a really good way of learning what another person believes and why they believe what they believe. Those are the good reasons and bad reasons to like arguments. Bad reasons to avoid arguments are, well, because it's all too emotional. Perhaps you don't actually engage in the more rational, but it's have been hurt and you're worried about being shown to be wrong. There's a kind of insecurity that we can have. Those are reasons why people tend to avoid argument. And I think that those are things that we have to counter. I mean, those are things that we really don't want. We want people to be able to stand back a little and look at their view from another person's point of view, look at the other person's view in an open-minded way. That's what we want. We want people to be able to engage with each other, to learn to listen to each other, and to learn from each other.
How do we take emotion out of arguments?
That's a really, really good question. I mean, for me, there was an experience that I had that made me realize that that was important. Was when I was a very young graduate student and had just arrived at a big American university to start my PhD, I was talking with a very famous philosopher who was aged when I met him. He must have been in his 80s. And he was someone who was a famous logical positivist from the 20s. And he and I got into a discussion over dinner, and I made some remark to him about a view that he had published that was a view that he was very famous for. And I expected to have a to and fro about it. And his response to me was, yeah, you know, you're right. And you could make your point even better if you put it like this. And in doing that, what he did was he showed that he was really interested in figuring out what was true. He was not interested in the question of coming away from that discussion the winner. He was interested in actually figuring out what was right. And that was the whole point of engaging with someone honestly, I realized. I, to my shame, had realized that that wasn't really my motive. My motivation, if I was honest, was something like, I'm going to show this guy just how smart I am. I'm going to make a really clever point. And it was actually a wake-up call to me to sort of say, no, that's actually not the reason you should be engaging in this sort of discussion. You should be after the truth, not trying to show how smart you are. And that made me realize that that's a really common thing, that both trying to show how smart we were, but also being worried about being shown to be wrong, because that's going to show that we're not that smart. I mean, all that is, to me, you know, quite confused.
Mm. And you've wrapped up in there too an example of having good arguments modelled to you as well. We've just had a text sent in by an anonymous texter who's given an opposite example. The worst people for arguments are politicians. They just slag each other off. And I think that that is quite interesting. Has the standard of political argument in Australia, do you think, stayed about the same, or has it got worse over years?
I'm not a historian of political rhetoric, so I'm not really one to ask one. Though we have had great rhetoricians in the past, like Gough Whitlam and Bob Menzies and Paul Keating, obviously, was a master rhetorician. I don't know that anyone really meets their standard today, but those are really rare. Masters of public argument. But I can't answer that question.
Well, you could say that perhaps Paul Keating in particular, was more about point scoring than perhaps putting an argument at times. Certainly during question time, he was famous for point scoring. Is there a loss? Do you lose out with point scoring?
I think you do. First, it changes the dynamic. You're no longer playing the game that you'd really want to be playing, which is seeking the truth, trying to show that your suggestions are the right ones for people to follow. And also by belittling the other person, you're not really encouraging an honest, open engagement with the other person. But probably political discourse isn't really about that. It really is about playing to an audience and trying to show the audience that you're smarter and more switched on than the other person. It's the audience that matters, not the other person.
Yes, I think motivations are a very important thing here. So I wonder then what tips you might have for better arguments. And let's see, Jenny from WA has written in and she said, I think always validate first. It's so important. I believe, you know, for example, yes, I hear you, and then give our point of view. What do you think about Jenny's tips there?
Well, I think that is good. Good advice, but that also is about, you don't want to be doing that in a formulaic way. I mean, you really want to be listening and getting clear what the other person is saying, because you stand to learn from the other person. If you're doing it in an honest manner, then it might turn out that what the other person is saying is absolutely correct. So engaging with the other person honestly means really listening and getting clear what they are saying. It might be that what they're saying isn't, going to knock down your view or even harm you. It might be that they are talking, orthogonally to what you're saying. And that can happen quite a bit where we misunderstand each other. But that's important too. If you realize that, then you can clarify for the other person what your view is in a way that allows for their view. And that's progress in the discussion between the two of you. So absolutely, I think listening to the other person and listening with generosity that the other person isn't a complete idiot is really part of the story.
Well, you've made an assumption there about the other person not being a complete idiot. Debrilla's written in, I think, assuming that situation. She says, the first rule in arguments is if you're up against someone who has absolutely no idea what they're talking about, start correcting their grammar, which confuses them, and they walk away thinking you're a bit odd, and then thankfully off they go. So I'm not really quite sure that that's the most constructive way to approach an argument, but it is one way. So what happens, do you think, when you can't reconcile your argument with another person, that they believe something or they know something and you believe something or know something that's quite different and you can't find a middle ground? What happens then?
Right. I mean, partly that does happen. It happens quite a bit. As a one-off, there's not much progress that can be made, except that you can come to understand what the other person honestly believes. Because what we haven't discussed in this discussion is there's good faith engagement and there's bad faith engagement. There's where people are not really wanting to express their honest view to you. What they're really wanting to do is to elicit some emotional response from you. That's what we tend to get on the internet and social media and so forth. Arguments by meme, etc., are typically not about truth. They're about eliciting strong emotional response from the other person. And they're really bad faith arguments. That's a way of not trying to take the other person seriously. So we need to be better at recognizing those sorts of bad faith moves, and also learn, once we do recognize them, to dissociate from them, because they're not actually about trying to get at the truth. So I think we have to be better at trying to figure out what sorts of engagement are we engaged in here. What's going on here? What is this person trying to do? Are they trying to honestly get at the truth and tell me what they honestly think? Or are they trying to get me to respond in an emotional way, to be triggered, and that's what they want as their success? If it's the latter, then we do far better to just dissociate and not go on with the debate.
Step back and get yourself out of it. Yeah.
But if it's honest, like the case you were discussing earlier, where you can have honest disagreements with someone, it doesn't need for us to come to a common understanding resolve to one view that we both agree. If I understand what you believe, what you honestly believe, and your reasons for honestly believing, even if I don't give them the credence that you give them, I've understood you a lot better. And if you can understand me a lot better, if you understand what I think and why I think it, that's progress, even if it's not a resolution where we both converge on the same view. And I think that's really worthy a worthy project to have.
It is, and I think you've just answered the question then of Bluey in Canberra, who asked what's most annoying is the Gish Gallop police talk about that, which is that idea of people coming forward with specious arguments that don't really progress the desire for a shared understanding. How do you manage yourself, Michaelis, in a situation where you might find yourself emotionally taxed by the kind of argument or discussion that you're having?
Yeah, I mean that requires a bit of self-understanding and a bit of marshalling of your own emotions. You know, sometimes I'm better than other times at being able to recognize that I'm in that situation and to be able to marshal my emotions. But I think that's typical. Maybe one advantage I have is that I deal in arguments a lot. So I have a lot of, being a philosopher, you spend a lot of time engaging with and trying to make sense of arguments. And so for that reason, you know, practice makes perfect. And I've had a lot of practice, not saying I'm perfect, far from it, but I have certainly engaged with arguments a lot.
I like that phrase, though, practice makes perfect, because it does remind us that we can get better at arguing if we do keep some of these things in mind and apply ourselves. It's been an interesting discussion this evening, and I think hopefully we can have a slightly better weekend with a few more debates and a few less outright screaming matches with people, even if that means a few less capital letters on the keyboard too. It's been good to discuss. Thank you so much this evening.
No worries. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There's Associate Professor Michaelis Michael, who is from the School of Humanities and Languages at the University of New South Wales.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.